Coming from the backwoods of New Jersey, welcome to the Jersey Guys Music Podcast, where we feature in-depth music discussions and interviews with special guests from the worlds of hard rock, heavy metal, and AOR music. So settle in and crank it up. Now, here are your hosts, the Jersey Guys themselves, Tom and Mark.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Jersey Guys podcast. I'm Mark Ballow here with my co-host, Tom Coyne. And today joining us is a special guest who, quite honestly, this guy is one of my favorite AOR singers in the last 20 years. I think Tom would agree with that. But he's a guy that's had a lot of stuff for the last 40 years. So we're going to talk about that and a little bit of everything that he's been doing lately. But please welcome to the show, Robbie LeBlanc. Robbie, welcome.
Guys, thanks so much for having me tonight.
Thank you. Thank you for joining.
Much appreciated.
Yeah. So what we were saying even before we started, I mean, Tom and I are just huge fans of your voice. I've been kind of turned on to it since 2005 with the debut, or well, actually it's the second Blank Faces album. But yeah, I've been turned on to it since that time. And yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I think between you here in the US and maybe a guy like Kent Hilly from Sweden, are probably two of the premier modern day AOR singers right now. So it's really good to be talking to you because we got a lot of stuff we're going to talk about.
Oh my God, fellas. Thanks for having me. And Kent, you know, great singer. So to be in the, you know, same phrase as Kent, thank you. Right on.
I don't even know where to start because you've done so many things over the last, you know, 20 years or so. Maybe we could jump back to the early days and talk about like the band Fury. You had that with your brother, Brian.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about, you know, how you got into music, you know, all that stuff and how Fury came about.
Oh my God. So if I start, let's see, I just turned 65 and let's see, when I was about 3 or 4 years old, my dad was very musical. He played about 7 chords on the guitar. He played a C, an A7, D7, G7, and played all these like Johnny Cash things. And right. But he brought in this guy named Trini Lopez, and it was just back in 63. You know, I would say Trini's this kind of guy that played like folk songs in an upbeat sort of 60s way. It was all live, and he had a great voice. And I tried to sing like him, you know, as a kid. And when the Beatles came in at 64, it was about McCartney, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then my brother was a little younger than me. So maybe when I was like 7 and my brother was about 3, I swear to God, I kid you not, we actually could do like harmony already. Wow. at that young age. And it wasn't taught, you know, we just kind of knew how to do it. Right. And, so we just kept on singing through the years. My brother had a little lower voice than I did. Mine was always a little higher. And God, we could harmonize anything. We could do the Beatles, the Eagles, the Bee Gees, all that stuff, right? You know, the Everly Brothers, whatever it was. So through high school, we had some bands. You know, we went to college at UConn, you know, in Storrs, Connecticut. And when I was about 24, I met Felix Cavalieri. You know, Felix was in the Rascals, like,
sure.
And Felix lived in Danbury, Connecticut, and I was from Stamford, Connecticut, and I met Felix, and he took a liking to me fast, and you know, loved like the demo tape, you know, that we had. So we went with Felix and met Sid Bernstein, the guy that brought the Beatles like to Shea Stadium and all that. What a character Sid was. So we got a record deal with this new label back then called the New York Music Company. And it was kind of a wild label. You know, we cut two videos that are on YouTube, actually. They surfaced recently. We did In Her Arms, you know, from the first Fury record, and Keep on Dreaming, you know, which was a single. Mm-hmm. And we cut those in New York. And if you play them, I have a lot more hair, you know, which was cool. And, but yeah, so that was a lot of fun. We cut those in Connecticut at Soundtech Recording. And that album came out, and then it was getting some really nice traction, but you know what happened, guys, was something really, really strange. The label, it was like an inside sort of a, I don't know what the word is, conspiracy thing was going on, where the label had a budget like to print a certain amount of records. Mm-hmm. And records were printed down in, I think, Hopwog or something. Long Island was the big, like, pressing plant.
Okay.
And they said they pressed a bunch of records, but they didn't. And there was an inside guy at the label, like, that siphoned off a bunch of money and stuff. It was a really, really bizarre thing. And it was weird. So we were on, like, very small rotation on MTV. I remember my brother and I were with Mark Goodman. Right? Like the old, like, VJ, whatever it was called.
Yep.
Right. And Mark, I could see, like, Mark saying, who are these guys? Why are these guys on this show? Because we had zero traction. Right. I think there was some kind of thing where the owner of the label knew the guy from American Express, which owned MTV. So we were kind of forced on. Right. and then we were on, like, VH1 for a while, and we started to get some, you know, some hits, but there were no records in the store. And the album just went whoosh, right?
Mm.
Crazy, man. Wow. Crazy stuff. Yeah.
So that kind of went real quick and didn't, you know.
It did. Yeah. And Felix stuck with us for like another year, you know, but then he had to get back on the road and make some money, you know, because he was at that time, you know, he was 40, you know, and I was about 24, which makes sense because, you know, Felix is 81 and I'm 65, you know, so it's, just nuts the years that have gone by, but you know, Felix is still out there singing his butt off, man. He sounds great.
Yeah. That's great.
Yep.
Now, do you think it was the reissue of that album on CD that kind of got you in the mix of what would end up being like a lengthy career now as a prominent singer in the AOR industry?
You know, I think after the blood, so then my buddy, well, then we had a record deal with Atlantic. That we were signed to a Reef Martin, you know, for a while. Like, and I know you guys know your rock history, and this guy, Reef Martin, you know, brilliant producer, produced everybody, like, in Atlantic Records, and you know, Reef lived up in Connecticut, and I remember dropping off a DAT tape in his mailbox, and he had phoned me the next day, right, and I thought it was my buddy fooling around with me. He goes, "Hello, is Robert there?" You know, he was Turkish, right, and said, "Hey, Len, you know, stop fooling around." And, "Oh, no, this is a Reef Martin. You know, you put a tape in my mailbox, please go down and talk to my assistant, Vicky." So we went down to, then, like, Atlantic Records was on 1841 Broadway, right next to Lincoln Center.
Okay.
And we went up there. We had a deal with a Reef for about 6 months, and that didn't do well. So then from there, we had a shot up in Connecticut to record at Michael Bolton studio for many, many years. Actually, we cut about a good 24 to 36 songs at his house. And he was very, very nice to my brother and I, letting us record in his studio. And back then he had like a 48 track Sony Digital, you know, which was the state of the art, you know, then. And then from there, that kind of went down. And then my buddy Lenny sent a tape to Frontiers Records. And that's how the Blank Faces thing started. So when that started, I would say that's when the reissue of the Fury record came.
Okay.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was kind of weird.
The first debut on Frontiers, the Blank Faces, was actually the second Blank Faces album that you recorded, right?
Yes. So we had a Blank Faces record. The first one was a self-produced thing, right? So
that's right here, When the World Comes Down.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Oh, my God. So most of that was recorded at Michael Bolton's house, you know, not all of it, but we had that out. And my brother sings a lot on that record.
Mm.
So, which was kind of, as we were kind of going through a thing where back at that point in time, if you had a voice like Luke Graham or, you know, like a high sort of rock voice, it was kind of just not looked at as good anymore. Right. So my brother had more of like a Tom Petty-ish thing going on. And so we did it. So that was like a compilation, self-produced. And then the second Blonde Faces, which actually is the first on Frontiers, was the one that I think came out and did a little something.
Right.
So, yeah. Yep.
So who would you say, if you had to pick a couple of guys that you were your musical vocal influences as we even to you today?
Yeah. So, yeah, I know we're talking offline a little while ago, but man, it goes from everyone from Felipe Wynn from the Spinners to Daryl Hall and then McCartney and, of course, Mark Farner from Grand Funk Railroad. But I'd probably say my favorite singer, when he nailed it, for me, no one was better than Bobby Kimball from Toto. He was my guy that could, man, when he was on it.
Oh, good one. Jesus, yeah. Man.
He was like, man, we called him Louisiana Lightning, you know? Yeah. And he was a beautiful guy. You know, he was very, very nice to me. And Bobby and I used to talk a lot, you know, on the phone, and very, very beautiful man. You know, I really miss him.
What was your connection there with Toto? Cause I know you have a little bit of where you've kind of jumped on stage with those guys over the years.
Yeah. Right? They let me up there a couple of times, which is sweet of them, man. Right. So, the latest was, My buddy Alan Friedman, who's a accountant up here in Connecticut.
Yeah.
I'm in Delaware. But Alan knows them well. And and he got me introduced to all those guys, like Luke and all the guys. But it was weird. Like, I was on the show Star Search with my brother back in 1985.
Ah.
And as the band part of it, you know, the whole Ed McMahon thing and stuff. So we were the band part called the Furies.
Wasn't Joseph Williams Furies on that also?
He was. He was on the same show.
Right.
And so there's a clip that maybe some year, you know, maybe 5 years ago, I jumped up on a sound check with Alan with Toto and did a little snippet of White Sister. Mm. And after the clip was over, I went back and Joe was there. I said, hey, man, you and I were on Star Search back in 1985. And he was, you know, like laughing his butt off, you know, it was hysterical. Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Yep.
Now, you mentioned Grand Funk.
Yes.
A band that I grew up with. We're actually, me and you were the same age. And to this day means a tremendous amount to me. What did they mean to you and your musical development?
Oh, my God. So, you know, just Mark Farner. I mean, let's face it, guys. Look, I'm married 30 years, you know. But you know, when you look at Mark Farner, right? You know, he had the long hair, the thing around his arm, right? He had just this, you know, not a great solo player, but when he opened his mouth, it was like, who the hell is a better singer like than this guy too, right? So it's like, Bobby Kimball, Mark Farner, you know, Lou Gramm from Foreigner, of course, you know, in his heyday, right? Mark was just like this grassroots, just kick it in, man. You know, and then when they got Craig Frost on the boards there, you know.
Yes,
just,
I always say that. It made a huge difference. As much as the stuff before it was great, it took them to another level, I thought.
It did.
Yeah.
It did, man. And I love those guys, man. I got every record. And I met Mark twice. And the second time was when Felix was playing with Ringo Starr. Felix was in like Ringo's all-star band, and Felix got us all backstage, you know, like my mom, my dad, my wife and I, and we got to see Mark again, and we met like Billy Preston. John Entwistle was a really nice guy. Randy Bachman. Wow. Right. And you know, of course, Mark was there, and he was just a humble son of a gun. And I said, Mark, I just love your voice, man. He goes, hey, man, the Holy Spirit, you know, and he was, you know, just very, 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 just a beautiful guy. You know, very, very.
Yeah, well, he transcended into Christian music.
Christian stuff, exactly.
For quite a while. But when you talk about his lead guitar playing, the thing with Mark Farner is his stage presence and the way he strutted and the way he played the guitar, you didn't even notice he wasn't really that good because he just put it over in such a way that you thought he was great.
Yeah, you know, but I really think he's fantastic because I'll try to play some of those licks today. I can't do it.
Right. Well, that was the thing with a lot of the 70s players. Like the shred is, You know, like the kids that were grew up with the Shredders look at those guys and they right. think like, you know, and in reality, the Shredders will tell you a lot of the things those guys did, they have a yes. hard time replicating. And yeah, he was one of those guys. He wasn't like, you know, like all over the fretboard, but he played some great grooves. And again, the stage presence was
rhythm. Yeah. His like rhythm chops.
His rhythm chops were great.
Yeah. And then he had just that little soulful rock thing right. and his voice. He could sing anything, right, man? You know, it's just, yeah, I just love him. I do. Yeah.
And then you had Brewer who sang, you know, right, some of the best songs that they ever did.
Oh, man. I know. It, like Brewer could play his butt off too, man. What a great drummer.
And Mel Schaefer. Jack around the bass. I mean, Mel Schaefer, forget about it. Yep. I mean.
Crazy. Yeah.
So what I wanted to ask you is, how did you get to the lofty status you are now as a guy that is like really entrenched in the AOR scene as it is today? What do you feel was the album or the recording you did that got you to be a guy that is so much in demand in the year 2025?
Oh, man, I wish I was in demand. I mean,
demand in the scene. I mean, I know the scene.
I mean, thanks for saying that.
Yeah.
Guys, you've definitely put me in a whole nother thing. I'm definitely like a legend in my own mind now. So thank you for that tonight. Now I think that, you know, any sort of notoriety that has come my, you know, way was all about, you know, like the blunt faces started it. And then I kept on going. The Frontiers guys gave me a shot to do the Find Me thing. And when the Find Me thing came, that's where most of all the accolades or whatever came from. You know, we got some nice reviews. You know, we still have about 10,000 Spotify, you know, people listening, but I don't know if there's going to be another Find Me record. I don't know. Really? I don't know if it's run its course, but you know, it was fun to do the five of them. You know, we had a chance to play it, you know, a couple of shows at Nottingham, you know, once with Blonde Faces and once with the Find Me stuff. It was a lot of fun. I mean, pretty much anything now, if somebody calls me to do a project or something like that, and I have time like to do it, and I'm not running around with my other job, which you guys know what that is. And
well, you know, we'll bring it into. I was going to wait till the end, but you know, we'll show you. You know, talk about what you do there.
I'm an old wine guy. Yeah. So if I'm free, I'll cut like the vocals here in my studio and. Yeah, just an old wine guy. I've worked with Bogle Vineyards out in California for, you know, 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So just love the wine business and still doing it. Yeah.
Yep. Doing a lot of traveling back and forth, East Coast to West Coast?
I was there last week, actually, like in the West Coast, in Sacramento.
Yeah. Okay.
It was a lot of fun. It was cool. Yeah.
Now, you did mention Find Me, and I personally feel out of the five albums, the brand new one is the best.
Oh, thank you.
What were your feelings on that album?
Well, you know, the first one was always we had some good cuts. I'll probably say that from the first album, I probably liked three of the songs on it. And then the second one was a little better. And then I think the last one and this one are the ones that kind of shine the most. And I think we got a few different writers in to help out, you know, and all the pressure wasn't on Alessandro. You know, we got some more writers in the mix that, you know, to help. And then they allowed me to do a couple of Jimmy Jameson things. And then that, and then the cover from my buddy Vince DiCola wrote that song Far From Over, which was in the Rocky soundtrack. We did a cover on that one, which was a lot of fun. And having the shot to do a Jimmy Jameson song twice has been a lot of fun for me. I love Jimmy. Never got the accolades that he should have. But still, legendary singer for me.
Yeah. Oh, I think in our eyes, I think he definitely got the accolades. One of my favorites. I'm sure one of yours too.
Love him. Yeah. Love him, man. It, you know, just to have a shot to do a couple of those songs was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, you covered I See You and Everyone on the most recent Find Me album. Mm-hmm. And then you did with Desperate Dreams on one of the second Find, was the second album? Second Find Me?
I think that was, wasn't third? It on, I think that was on the last one.
The last one? Okay.
The one before the one before one. Yeah.
The fourth one? Okay.
Yes.
I mean, it's yeah, a shame to hear you say that there might not be another one, because I really do.
Yeah, I haven't.
Tom and I talk now how the newest one probably is the strongest so far. So
I appreciate that, guys. No, I haven't heard a thing from Serafino. So maybe it's done. You know, I don't know. You know, yeah, we'll see what happens. With the help of God, we'll get another one.
Well, you mentioned a minute ago, you mentioned Vince DiCola.
Yes.
Let's go over to this band that you had back in, was it 2021, Cannonballs?
Yeah.
Tom and I, and we kind of speculated that this had to be like something that was maybe in the can, an older thing because of all who was involved in it. I mean, you talked to Alan Friedman earlier. He was a guitar player on that. You had Vince DiCola. You had Jonathan Mover on drums, Doug Wimbash on bass. Really great band. How did that project come about?
So Alan Friedman, you know, knows all these guys, right? You know, like Luke Ather and stuff, and you know, Vince DiCola, you know, old friend now. And we just wanted to have some fun, so we flew to Los Angeles. God, this is a long time. Like, the first Cannonballs record was started before my dad passed away. It's got to be over 10 years, right? Ago. And so we had the record in the can for a while, you know, and it just took me a long time to write lyrics on it. You know, one of my favorite songs of all time, song Sorry, S-A-R-I, is one of my favorite. I don't know what, you know, I mean, if I had to really, guys, you know, take a step back, it's not me singing it like ready that crap, right? Because I can't stand to hear my own music. That song is just so, if Richard Page could do it from like Mr., that would have been, right? You know, but I love that song. You know, one of my favorite things I've ever sang on, but just to let you guys know, we just cut. So last December, Alan, myself, Vince, Leland Sklar, Lee Sklar on the bass.
Wow.
So we're going to have a second Cannonballs records coming.
And, really?
That's interesting.
Yeah. And this one's going to be 20 times better than the last one. Swear to God.
Wow.
It's some great songs on it. We're actually doing a cover of, Toto song, White Sister.
Oh,
that's probably one of my top five.
Yeah.
Toto slamming. Songs.
Wow.
Yeah.
What are you looking at timeline for that? You thinking the end of this year or 26?
Nah, I want to, we all want to finish it like this year. So with the help of God, we'll do that.
Yeah. Wow. But that's
we got
great
some
news.
great players on this thing. Yep.
Wow.
So Cannonballs was something that was recent, like fairly recent, because at the time, again, like what Mark said, with the guys that were on it, and it really had like that vintage AOR sound.
Yes.
And I was kind of under the impression it might have even been something that was like in the can, like that you guys pulled out, but it's fairly recent. I mean, it was within the last decade it was recorded.
Yes. Okay. Yes, it was. Yep. And it was all cut, you know, like the basic tracks were cut at the Steakhouse in Los Angeles. And, which is a nice little studio. And that's where we cut the second one as well. And so that was done December 2024. No, is it 23? No, it can't be
23. 2021, the album came out, right?
Yeah, but this new one, I think we cut the basic. Yeah, yeah, basic tracks were cut, let's just say like January 1st to 24. So we got, it's a year in the can as far as the tracks go, but now we got to finish everything now. Yeah,
gotcha.
You know, put all the stuff on it. Yep.
Now, in your opinion, I'm very curious to see what you have to say about this. There are so many AOR albums that come out in this day and time, believe it or not.
Yeah.
You're probably familiar with that. So few of them are able to capture the essence of what we know and love. Is it because of the difference in time? Is it because it was basically AOR as it we came to know it was something that was from New York City and the West Coast, California?
Right.
Is it the fact that there's a lot of European artists that are doing it and it's just impossible to capture the era of the 80s and also that vibe of California and New York City?
That's a great, great question. I would take even one step further and say, look at how the songs are recorded now, right? So most guys are doing all the pro tools and all that stuff, right? So back in the day, we used to have to go
physically go into studio,
right? Studio stuff. And still, you know, I don't know. I can tell like when something is, you know, like live or cut up or whatever, you know, it's just a feeling about it. And I just think that if you go back, and I force myself to do this all the time. I mean, you know, I pretty much every, you know, vinyl record I buy is all the old stuff. I mean, I just got a, you know, just yet another copy of Bad Company Running with the Pack, right? So it's like, and I'm playing that, right? So I don't play anything new. I really don't. You know, I don't play anything new. I don't buy anything new. And if really anything, I'm going back finding stuff from the 70s,
right.
60s or 70s that I haven't heard yet, mm-hmm. right? I don't want to hear anything new. And maybe that's the worst thing I can do, right? But I swear to God, to keep my head in that old game, don't want to hear anything new.
Well, I have this guy for that. He tells me about everything and he turns me on to it.
Right. I couldn't tell you, really, is any new artists, man.
Yeah.
None. Yeah.
I kind of juggle both, and I do a lot of what you're saying, too. There's a lot of stuff that you thought you knew everything in the 70s, but you
Correct.
Didn't because you were a teenager, and in your mind you thought you did. But
Correct.
I'm constantly finding out bands that I missed out on. But I also feel I want to stay current. I don't want to totally live in that because I really do feel rock and roll is a young person's game. And I think that if you look at all the great rock bands, all those albums were recorded by guys in their 20s and early 30s.
Yes.
You know, so I don't want to be that guy that totally lives in the past. So I'm always looking for new bands. But I'm very picky and I'm very critical, too. And when it comes to vintage metal or vintage AOR, I'm extremely picky because those are my two loves. And I'm always trying to find the small selection of bands that are able to get it right, you know, as opposed to just sounding at the end of the day like a bad imitation. And it's a small percentage. And I think what you said is true. Like it was guys that don't go into a studio anymore.
Yeah.
It's got a very cold approach today.
It does. I mean, I mean, guys, if I had to like take a band, the latest band that I got into that I actually bought something that was new to me, and you're going to laugh your butt off. I just know it already. Was the Cult, right?
Yeah.
The Cult with Ian Astbury?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I was into them before they were even rock.
Nothing to laugh about there.
Yeah, when they were like more of like a wave band in the early 80s.
See, I just knew them when I heard the song Fire Woman. Blew me away. Like Mickey Curry on the drums, right? Connecticut boy. And freaking Ian Astbury, oh my God, man. I go, look at this guy.
Oh, no, I'm a huge fan, yeah.
Woo! I am too. Huge.
Check out the album Love.
Okay, I will. I'm going to buy it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to load it and stream it.
Yeah, Love. That's my favorite album. But it's a couple albums before the one you're just talking about. It's two albums.
Cool, I can't wait
to. It's phenomenal.
That's awesome.
And it was really kind of before they went like hard rock. They were rock, but with like a little bit of a gothic, because that's what they started. They started out as the Southern Death Cult, and then they changed.
Never knew
name.
That.
Yeah, then they changed their name to the Cult. But get the album Love. Yeah. It's incredible.
Okay, cool. Done.
A couple of projects I did want to talk to you about.
Please.
One of them is the Three Tenors project, which I thought the material on that album was incredible, and the way your voice paired up with the legendary Toby Hitchcock.
Nice.
Honestly, when I first saw that you three guys, the first thing I thought is, I hope Hitchcock doesn't drown out these other two guys because he's got a voice like, but the way you guys blend it, and you know, you could hear you at certain points, Kent Hilly at certain points, and the songs. I remember the first time I listened to it, I wrote Mark and I was like, you got to hear this album. It is
really,
really good. Tell us a little bit about how that all came about, that project.
Yeah. So the Frontiers guys, I was approached by Serafino and Mario and said, hey, you know, do you want to do, you know, do a record with Kent and Toby? I went, oh my God. Yeah. Are you kidding me? This is fantastic. And Alessandro Del Vecchio wrote, I think, all the songs on
really?
It, produced everything. Wow. Yeah. And, he was pretty precise on what he wanted. I mean, you know, he had all our lyric sheets with what each guy was going to sing, you know, which part, you know, and we had all the guide vocals. And then each one of us sang one in its entirety. And it was a lot of fun doing that. I was nervous too, because, you know, I didn't know what the final mix was going to give Kent and Toby, if they were going to be really shredding it or bringing it back or where to find it. So I just sort of trusted what I had. I gave them about four or five takes of each song, you know, one a little less, you know, one maybe just a little heavier. And I think with, you know, when they got all the five different takes, it was all there. Right. So, you know, so it worked out pretty well. Yeah. Thank God you guys heard it, man. That's nice news. Thank you.
I mean, the response on the album seemed to be really strong. I mean, I just from looking at different, but like my own ears, I absolutely loved it on the first time I listened to it. And I've listened to it probably at least 10 times over. And I just was very impressed by each one of you guys have very different voices. And like I said, Hitchcock to me is, you know, he's like a legend. I mean, his voice is incredible. And when I saw the three, I know how powerful this guy is. Mm. And I was very impressed. And I guess it was Alejandro who put the whole thing together, because the vocal layers are perfect. There are some points, you know, when all three is singing together, you could hear all three different voices. And then there's different parts where you hear it's you, it's here, you hear it's them. It's and the songs are so. Would you say this guy is one of the top songwriters of all time in this AOR field? I think he is. An unsung hero that nobody really mentions.
You know, he's very much known though in this little
circle. Without a doubt.
Of writing, producing, mm-hmm. all that kind of thing. And I mean, first and foremost, he's a sweetheart of a man, and his heart is huge. You know, he's always doing like animal welfare stuff. He's a vegetarian, and he's just a beautiful, beautiful guy, first and foremost. So that's one. Second, I mean, like the guy could write. I mean, he writes so many songs, you know, and was, I think he's taken a step back, if I'm not mistaken, from the Frontiers camp, so he could allow himself a little more like leeway to go out like and do other projects that aren't.
He was playing with a band in the States, right?
Yeah, I think he wanted to concentrate on a band thing. Yeah,
he's what, he's a keyboard player.
Mm-hmm. Keyboard player. Yeah. It could sing his butt off. You know, has a really high voice, right? So, I would get these demos from him, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm too proud to change the key, right? So. Yeah, that's not going to happen. So, oh my God, you know, Al, what are you doing to me, man? You're high F, really? Okay. So I really had to buckle down on these songs, man. Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So were you happy how that album came out? Were you thrilled with it?
Yeah. It was just a great, you know, great thing. I'm sorry what the word is, just a great experience to be with those guys.
It's a terrific idea on his part. I mean, I give him so much credit for having the ingenuity to come up with that whole three tenor idea.
It's hard to do that. You know, it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you said, you know, he had in his head, he had this idea of like parts and who was going to sing what and everything. So it's tough to put together. I mean, you think about was it the Allen, Russell Allen and Jorn Lahn?
Right.
Did those things for Frontiers where they had the dual singers. You guys did the three things. So
three. Yeah. Thank God. The Father, Son, Holy Spirit.
Now you've also done work with a guitar player that I've followed for probably the last 25 years, Tommy Denander. And you did the Vital Lines album, which I'm a huge fan of that album. If you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, Tommy wanted to do a record, and I said, yeah, you know, it would be nice if we could maybe get sort of a Foreigner vibe on it. You know, he goes, oh, that's great, you know. So we got that, and I think We just came out with this new one. I don't know if you guys heard this new one, Blue Ambition, you know, with Frederick Slama.
Yes. Well, we're going to bring that up towards the end. Cool, I know that's not out till the end of this month, but yeah, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. So both were, you know, with Tommy. So, you know, different writing styles, you know, but it was fun. I'm 65, you know, with the help of God, I don't know how many years you have left, but you know, I lost my brother, you know, 3 years ago, and that was a complete, had no idea that was going to come. Right.
Yeah.
So I just want to keep the voice going. And I play a lot down here in Delaware, where I live in Lewis, Delaware. So still trying to keep it going. Haven't lost any range yet. So I could still, we still do foot stomping music in my cover band, you know, in the key of C. Come on, everybody, yeah. Have good time, yeah, yeah. So anyway.
Nice.
So Farner's still there. So we're still doing that. And so any project like that comes up, you know, yeah, the songs are good, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Well, you talked about projects. Let's talk about, and I guess it was kind of a project because I don't know, and you could tell me a little bit, but your solo album. Double Trouble.
Through
Escape, which is
a very old friend of mine, Khalil Turk. We go back 40 years.
Sweetheart.
Yeah.
Sweetheart of a man. And I'm going to ask him when we get some tracks mixed for the, you know, new Cannonballs record. You know, Khalil is a huge fan of Vince DiCola. So I'm going to ask.
Yes, he is.
That's right.
Khalil, like, if we could put this album out through him.
He would probably would bite on that. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great.
I hope he does. Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that solo album you did with Escape. It was an album that had a lot of different styles. I actually was working for a website at one point back then, and I did a CD review or an album review of that at the time. And I mean, it had your 80s AOR sound, that had some 70s West Coast in there. It had some pop sounds and stuff. Talk a little bit about the styles on that album.
Yeah. So Tommy wrote, I think, pretty much everything on that, right? So, and it was just fun to hear the styles in it. And, Tommy said, hey, look, what do you want to do? I said, well, I don't know. You know, for a solo record, I'd like to touch on maybe just not one genre and just stick to that the whole record. Hmm. So there was some fun. God, I think even one of the songs had a kind of like Miami Vice vibe to it or something. I'm like blowing the name on it now, but it was a fun song.
He's a big fan of that show. He's got the
Miami Vice, forget it.
Total nut for that show. I have the box set. I still watch them.
Same here. Look at I have the DVD, like Blu-ray sets to all these things. So I got them all. I put them in. Yeah.
The amazing thing with Miami Vice is I started watching them last year. My girlfriend got me the box set for Christmas. And as you're watching every episode, the music, and I'm still finding out about bands that I'll hear the song and Google them. And I was like, oh, shit, I never heard about it. The music was just unrelenting great from the first season right to the end. And whether it was like something that was high in the song or like background, you'd hear stuff and you'd be like, wow, that's fucking great. What is that? You know, and then you'd have to, I used to write down and go do Google searches of these lyrics and find out these esoteric bands that I never heard of. And this is like, I'm totally like last year, you know, like.
It's just great. Yeah. I mean, and then, I mean, like to see Glenn Fry as an actor.
No, that's
like
one of the best episodes. Yeah.
The best.
That's one of the
amazing.
Best episodes. Yeah.
Yep.
That's a top five episode. Smuggle is Blue. That's what the song Smuggle is Blue came because he was a drug smuggler.
Yep.
Great episode.
Just like clever writing, you know, the music, you know, the whole thing.
Oh,
just,
yeah. And it captures that era perfectly, more than any other show. Mm. If anybody ever tell you, like, what is 1985, 1986 all about? Will you watch that? And that's what it was all about. If you lived in a big city, like I grew up in Brooklyn and New York, whether it didn't matter, it was Miami or LA or that was what life was in 1985.
That's exactly right. And I still do the half beard. Thinking like the thinking I'm gonna look like some, you know, like half ass version of Don.
Yeah,
right.
Like an Italian Don Johnson.
Right.
Oh, God help me, man.
Well, we'll talk. I'm gonna tell you what my favorite song from your solo album was. Pure.
Pure was a beautiful song.
Tell anything about that?
Yeah, God, man. It was, you know, it was Tommy DeNander and, oh my God, and the beautiful Steve.
Steve Overland.
You know, Steve Overland. Oh my God, you know, so Steve wrote, I think Steve wrote all the records with Tom, songs with Tom.
Okay.
Tommy's coming back now. And Steve, so the hard thing about the solo record was I would get the demos in, right? And Steve was singing all these things. And
oh, wow.
I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, what am I supposed to do with this song, right? It's like freaking Steve Overland, you know? So I called Khalil. I said, hey, man, you know, Khalil, you sure you want me to do this record? I mean, you got all these beautiful songs with Steve on them. You know what? He goes, no, Robbie, you do it. You know, we know that you can do it. You know, and he was very, very supportive. And I gave it my all, you know. I mean, I had to try to outdo Steve Overland.
Wow. Man,
you know? And I'm not saying that I did, but I at least like made the attempt to go, well, let me try to get it better or put a, you know, little different spin on it to see where it went, right? Yeah. But Steve is just an amazing writer, singer.
Oh, unbelievable. Timeless. The guy's ageless.
Timeless. Ageless is correct.
Ageless, timeless, yeah.
Yeah, he has one of those voices that the minute he opens his mouth, you know it's him. And that's always...
Forget about
it. Yeah.
He's just, yeah. He's
it's what kind of separates the real upper echelon, when they just like one, you know, one syllable and you know that's Steve Oval.
Yeah. It's him. Yeah.
So, I was lucky enough to... I got to see FM do their only U.S. show in Chicago.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Was that a few years ago?
2017, 18, yeah, something.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
That's eight years. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Crazy, man.
got a picture of backstage with them. So now I can be happy and, you know.
It's so cool. That's awesome.
So there's so many things we could go through here. What do you want to pick next?
Sure.
I could go through all the Find Me albums, but I don't think we have enough time to.
Ooh, maybe let's talk about this one.
East Temple Avenue, which is an album I liked a lot.
Guys, I owe you one, man. I can't believe you have all the discs there. So,
oh, yeah.
You know what? God bless you both. East Temple Avenue. Well, a guy named Darren Phillips from Australia calls me and says, hey, you know, would you want to do some vocals on this project? And sorry, guys, I have a little cold here still.
That's okay.
Hang on a minute. So beautiful guy that played on all the Find Me stuff, Phil Lindstrom, was going to be a part of the band. And a couple of the guys, you know, from Crush, right? So it was a fun sort of thing. I said, yeah, sure. Let me try it. And the music, you know, the songs were really, really cool. And we were going to do like a second one, but I didn't have the time really because I was like trying to finish up a couple different things. You know, my brother had passed. You know, I just lost my mom back in August of last year.
Ah, sorry about that.
That was a long sort of thing. So it was all these things that I just wasn't like in the headspace for it. You know, like my heart wasn't there. So maybe we could do another East Temple at some point if we got all the troops assembled again. But it was just a lot of fun. You know, the songwriting was good, and I felt that I could lend something to it. So we gave it a shot. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that really, was really good songs on that album.
I appreciate that. You know, and we did everything separate. The hard thing is to try to keep it like you're all together. And that's when, like, you know, like really good, like musicians, you know, will play like these tracks live in the studio. And even though I'm not singing with them there, I really put myself in a place when I'm with the songs and my phones, I kind of really, really, you know, give it 1,000% to try to make sure that I'm there in the room with them. And I make a conscious effort for that. and I take a lot of different takes of things. I don't put anything through Pro Tools. I don't have it. I do everything the old way, you know. I mean, I do record on a little hard drive unit, but don't put anything through kind of the pitch stuff. I mean, if those guys want to tweak up something on like their end, I mean, I try not to give them anything pitchy. I'm pretty hard on myself with vocals. Mm. If I hear something that, you know, that's like, you know, a little bit off, I'll like do it again. But if I really like the performance and it's just a shade off, then they may kind of like bring it down a little bit. But yeah, the most part, I don't like to give like pitchy tracks. It drives me crazy. Yeah. It does.
So let's move on to, you mentioned it a little bit ago, but the most current thing you got coming out now, Blue Ambition, Frederick Slama.
Yes.
Of course, of AOR fame. This guy's had a million albums under the AOR moniker over the years. But talk a little bit about that. I know it comes out, I guess it's officially released at the end of this month, but I know some copies are out there. I know Tom even, I think, got his copy already, right?
I got it. I haven't listened to it. It just showed up in the mail. So.
Oh, beautiful. Good. Yeah. So again, you know, I got some of the demos for it in, I mean, I won't do a project that, you know, if I don't think I could do it any justice, right? So I heard some of the songs that, you know, like Frederick, yeah, man, let me do it with you. Sounds cool. You know, and it went pretty fast. You know, I, you know, knocked the songs off like pretty quickly, and it was a really good vehicle for me to get myself back in the studio head again with my mom and all that kind of thing, you know. So it came at a perfect time, guys, you know, and I liked the songs, and, you know, Tommy liked the vocals. I think Tommy Denander mixed everything and all that kind of thing. So Frederick liked the track. So I think they, you know, got some nice takes out of me, you know?
Nice.
Yeah.
Good. Looking forward to that. Yeah.
Oh, good. I hope you like it, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the help of God. Yeah.
I'm sure we will. Cause like, again, I think, you know, you can see by the pile of CDs and everything we touched on tonight, you know, we've got it all that you sing on. So I'm sure that's going to be another good one. No doubt.
I appreciate that.
So before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about, you have an association with Tony and Michael Sciuto.
Tony Sciuto?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure how to pronounce it. Yeah. I'm putting the
Sciuto. Yeah. Think of prosciutto.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm only half Italian. The other half's Irish. So
yeah, me too.
I'm giving you the Irish pronunciation. I'm very familiar with, I was a huge fan of Tony's. I have all of his stuff. And Mike did an album, I guess about 20 years ago. It was brilliant that nobody even knows it exists. But it's such a great album. And
that is, you know what, man? I can't wait to share that with him, because Tony and I have gotten close the last 3 years, because I'm in Lewis, Delaware. You know, he's in Rehoboth Beach over here.
Ah.
And we got playing, like, we do this little Beatles duo together down here.
So
like
you're doing it with Tony or Michael?
Tony,
yeah. Okay.
And then Tony and I have a little group with Paul Cohen. Paul played on a couple of years with the Bad Company guys, you know, during the Holy Water days.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So Paul played
one of their best albums.
Yeah.
And then Tony, of course, you know, his history with the Little River Band. And so we have a group called Bad River. And we do like Little River Band and Bad
Really? Oh, boy. I'd love to see that.
Yeah. It's fun.
You play out in Delaware?
Play in Delaware a lot. Yep. And we're you're in Jersey, you guys, right?
Yeah.
I'm in Freehold. Walker's in Kearney.
Freehold.
He's north, I'm beautiful. South.
Yeah.
No, we're doing another bad river gig. I'm going to let you guys know. You come down. You'll be my guests.
There you go.
Okay.
And what do you play? Just play in the Delaware area?
So far.
Yeah.
I think we might start to expand to Maryland, you know, a little bit. And maybe if the word gets out, we'll get up more. But nice little group. Yeah.
I bet.
I just saw a Little River Band a couple weeks ago.
It's amazing.
Played up here in New Jersey.
great songs. Oh. You know, people don't realize the hit records that they have.
I couldn't believe it. I mean, the whole show, I was like, I thought I maybe was going to know three or four songs because, you know, I'd never seen them before. I said, I got to see these guys. I know it's only the one who's left, you know.
Wayne Nelson.
But, you know, he's the only one left, you know. But I was like, I got to go check it out. And I ended up knowing, like, more songs than I even thought I would. So it was really enjoyable.
Yeah. And, you know, it like, forces me to get my guitar chops, like, together. Because, you know, because some of it, I'm just not used to playing that style. I'm more of a meat and potatoes, like a Tom Johnston guy. You know, like, Tom Johnston from the Doobies is probably my favorite front man.
Okay. Right?
You know, and of course, Pat Simmons, you know, had his, I mean, Pat, what a wonderful guitar player. Like,
oh, that was such a great, as a kid, I was taken up with the bass play. Cause again, my favorite band was the
Tyrann Porter. Amazing.
Only band that I knew that had a black guy in it was the Allman Brothers until I saw the Doobie Brothers. And as a kid, I thought that was so cool.
Because it is.
All you ever saw was white guys. So what I meant, the Allman Brothers had actually at one point had two black guys.
Yes.
And when I saw it, The black bass player is like, wow, this is so cool. It's another band with a black guy in it.
And what a player
he is. He was a terrific player. Oh. And singer, too.
Yeah, just...
His background vocals were great.
But you know what's funny? I mean, if you look at the Doobies history, I mean, right now there's John Cowan, who's a white guy, of course, on bass. But you've got the history. They went from Tyrann Porter to Willie Weeks.
Another black bass player, yeah.
And then Skylark.
Right.
Right? So, you know, and Skylark was a really nice guy, man. He was a Skylark. Man, that dude was like 6'7", man.
Mm-hmm.
He was a monster on the stage. But a sweetheart of a guy. Like, I met him twice.
Wow.
He was a nice, nice man. Yeah. Yeah.
And they had two drummers for a while also, which I thought was cool because the Allman Brothers had two drummers.
Yes. And then it was Mike Hasek and Keith Knutson.
Keith Knutson, yeah.
Yeah. And then now they got Ed, the last like decade, Ed Toth. And Ed used to be the drummer for Vertical Horizon.
Oh, really? Wow.
You know, for okay. A long time. Yeah. So huh. Ed, you know, so now how I know those guys... really strange, like a founding member of Vertical Horizon has been in the wine business.
Oh, wow.
For a long time. Like, he, you know, got off the road, this beautiful guy, Keith Kane, and him and Matt Skinnell were the founders mm-hmm. of Vertical Horizon. And
sure.
Keith got out of that whole touring thing, you know, after the, you know, like they had the huge record, right?
Right.
And then that was on BMG, you know, I think was RCA. And then, sort of like Mr. same label and everything, they come out with their follow-up record and RCA does nothing to like promote it.
Mm.
Now here's a multi-platinum band. I don't think like 2-3 million records like Vertical Horizon sold.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Well, that was the thing with those bands though. And that those 2000 era bands, they got like, they may have had a hit or so, and then they got no support on a second album. I mean, look at like
Zero.
The Calling and stuff
Zero.
Like that.
You know? Horrible. You know, it's so Keith has been working up at a distributor up in Massachusetts called Martinetti. And actually Keith and I met because I played in front of the sales group. You know, one thing that I do with my wine meetings is I bring music in, you know, I'm not the guy that just stands there, mm-hmm. puts a PowerPoint up and says, hey, you know,
right.
I play music. So we were launching a new wine and Keith and I like, you know, completely took, he's got everything you want. And we made it about a wine. Right. And the place just went crazy up there and Keith and I still stay in touch all the time. But Ed Toth was their like drummer for a long time. Yeah. Yeah.
I know Matt plays with Richard Marks here and there, right?
Richard
had
Marks.
A relationship with him for a while. Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Hmm. Yep. Interesting.
Funny stuff, man.
Yeah. So is there anything else you wanted to
Yes. What is your taste in wine?
Oh, my taste. So my favorite varietal, guys, I love a really amazing Pinot Noir. That's my favorite. And we have a brand called Juggernaut. As well, it's a little more expensive than the Bogle line, but the Juggernaut
I've had that. I've actually had that. I didn't even know that Bogle made that.
Yes, very very much. We fly under the radar on that thing because we didn't want our name on it, and we just wanted to do like a project that no one knew our name, and we just had these like wild labels on it. You know, the lion, the the Osprey, the Killer Whale.
I had no idea that Bogle made that. I actually bought it. You know, I got it in Sam's Club at it.
You know, fellas, I owe you a case of wine. Man. Oh, yeah.
And, we could talk.
And it's coming to Jersey.
I can out-talk this podcast with wine.
I love it.
More so than music.
Let's do another one.
Okay. We're going to change our name to the Wine Jersey, guys.
Let's
the Jersey
do it.
Wine
yeah.
guys.
Love it.
I'm a big California Cab and Zinfandel guy. That's my taste.
Oh, I'm a Zin guy
yeah.
too.
California
Zin is a close
Zins.
Second.
Yeah.
So you ever have a Turley Zinfandel? Turley's in?
No.
Little expensive, but I mean, our old vine stuff, the Bogle old vines in, is the best Zin you'll get under $20. They're and I swear to God, guys, this is not a company statement. It's absolutely true. And but if you want to go above like $20, I mean our Zin's maybe like $11. Above 20, you're in the Turley range, and it's a great check it out. I mean, Turley makes some of the best Zins around. Yeah.
How do you spell that?
Yeah, it's Turley. But like the Bogle Old Vine Zin just got a 91-point score for like $11.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. Crazy. Yeah.
Wow.
Excuse me.
Nice.
I collect a lot of the California's
Cabs?
More so the Zinfandels. My girlfriend's brother is nuts, like wine connoisseur, and it's unfortunately turned me on to roll these $100+ bottles.
Yes.
Which
yes.
I don't drink on a regular basis. I set up a little wine cellar for myself down here, and I have like about 15 bottles that I keep, you know, and I just keep them. But
that's fantastic,
yeah.
Man. That's so we should have a night where we hook up, man. Like drink some nice wine. Like maybe after the bad river gig you come
there you go.
Down.
I would really like to nice do because you're really not all that far from from
no,
us.
No,
yeah.
No. I'm always in Jersey, guys.
No,
are you really?
Yeah. So our distributor, one of them is up in Elizabeth and one is in Pine Brook.
Okay.
So I'm always around.
Real yeah. close to me, yeah. Up in North Jersey.
Yep. So I'm always around there.
I actually do a friend of mine, longtime childhood friend, his family had my friend's father, his father had made wine in his house in his basement, old Italian guy, you know,
of course.
But he followed his dad, Gotti, the family recipe. And he's been making wine now at one of these, I guess, facilities where they kind of do the whole process, you know, for everybody. And he's been doing this for about 14, 15 years now. I was dragged into it because I'm the graphic arts guy. So I design all the labels every year.
That is so cool. What's the name of the winery?
It's a place called Make Wine With Us.
Right.
And they kind of basically, they go through the whole process where they have the individual or the people who want to make the wine. They come in, you can bring in your own recipe. They could get something from them, but they do the whole process from the grape crushing, the barrel thing, the filling. And then finally we do the filling of the bottles, the labeling, the capping, the whole nine yards. And so I get to partake in that every year and I've been doing it for a while.
That's
and
so
it's interesting.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool, man. That's awesome.
So it's good
Excellent.
Stuff.
So we'll have a follow-up episode on wine.
Yes.
Sounds great. I am in 1,000%, fellas.
Excellent. So we will look forward to a new Cannonballs for sure, because when we're talking about AOR and music, that's really exciting news right there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, great. Yeah. I mean, like, it's just sitting in the studio with Leland Sklar, with Lee Sklar, was just, oh, my God.
Yeah, another Toto connection there, right?
I actually saw him with Toto when Mike had gotten sick.
Yes.
He filled in for Mike, and I saw him at B.B. King's in Manhattan play. It was when Bobby Kimball came back, like that when Bobby Kimball's big comeback.
Yep.
Yeah.
So really quick little story about Mike. So this is some years back. My buddy Alan Friedman and I, we like flew out to Chicago to see them. They were playing at either the House of Blues or BB. No, it was the House of Blues there, right?
Yeah, in Chicago.
Or the Hard Rock. Which one has the hotel there? Was it the?
Probably the Hard Rock.
I know
the House of Blues
is out
there, but probably the Hard Rock.
So
yeah.
they were playing there because we stayed at the Hard Rock. So we went backstage. I actually sat with Mike's wife, Cheryl, and I sat with Richard Marx's wife at the time, you know, and Richard was there as well. But, you know, he was down like on stage because he was going to get on a guest with them. But and I remember Cheryl and I were just talking, and Cheryl just started crying profusely. Right. And she said, Robbie, you know, I don't know what's wrong with Mike. And I said, oh, my God, Cheryl, what's the matter? And he had his hands taped that night at the show. Hmm. So we went, you know, she says, I don't know what's wrong. He's in so much pain, you know. It's after the show, he went back and said, Mick, what's going on, man? You know, he says, ah, man, my freaking hands. I don't know if it's the tour, but this is my last gig. And son of a gun fellows, a year later, he was diagnosed with the ALS.
Yeah, syndrome. Terrible.
And
terrible.
It was just a horrible thing. And, yeah, he was a real, man, we had a lot of laughs together. Oh, my God.
Wow.
Like we were, yeah, once we went to see him in New Orleans, and Mike said to me, hey, man, let's go watch this guy, like, in the other room. I go, what are you talking about? This is Mike Porcaro, right here. He goes, we got to check this guy out. He's the Guinness Book of World Records guy that could spin pie plates, like pizza pie plates, like the metal ones,
yeah.
And have all the, you know, the rods like sticking up, like spinning stuff. And Mike, we were
well, that's pretty impressive. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing that myself.
We were sitting at this, I don't even know where the hell it was now. Right. It was in New Orleans. Now, like this one was in New Orleans, and it was just this club. And then he had a separate, like, I don't know, like a burlesque sort of room that had all these kinds of things. So we're sitting at this long, just like wooden tape, table, drinking gin and tonics, and he goes, here he is. And the guy comes out, you know, and he comes out and he's got the things on his nose, he's spinning the pie plates, and Mike Porcaro is just beside himself laughing. We had such a fun night that
since
night.
Since you're my age, God. You might remember there used to be a guy who came on the Ed Sullivan show that did that.
Too. Right, exactly. Like something like that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there was.
Oh, God, boy, did we laugh that night, man. He was such a funny dude. Oh,
wow. Funny I'm guy. Actually going to see Toto in this summer in Atlantic City.
Oh, that's fantastic, man.
Yeah.
Who's in the band? Is Phil and Gaines in again?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Great addition. I was very high. I saw them last year, and he was already back in the band.
Yeah.
Yep.
Joseph Williams, yeah. Luke. Yeah. Yeah. William.
They just added another young keyboard player who sounds exactly like Fergie Fredrickson. I mean, to the T. And they've added.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You know,
they've added some of his songs in the set, the Fergie Fredrickson songs in the set.
Yes. You know, I liked a lot of that. I think it was the Isolation record, and I know that Fergie had a big thing to, you know, I mean, got it. I mean, like Kimball's gone, like Fergie's going to come in, right? But still, I mean, Fergie had some great, vocals, you know. Like,
great.
Yeah, like the Angel Don't Cry.
Yeah. Well, they were
Lion
doing that, right?
You know, yeah. Lion was cool.
Yeah.
You know, Lion in a sweat. Right, yep. great stuff, man. Killer.
We'll talk about where I were on the Toto kick. I caught it on YouTube. You did in 2018. You did a cover with Michael Palace.
Right.
You Got Me from the Seventh One album, right? What was that all about?
I did my best to channel Joe on that one.
You did? I was just playing it for Tom before.
I don't know. Like Michael Palace, talented kid. He goes, hey, man, would you sing on this track? Of course I will, man. Sure. Yeah, it was fun.
That's
cool. A guy I'd love to see you paired off with, because if you ever listen to his first album, have you ever heard his first album?
It's
tremendous.
It really
captures the 80s AOR. And in no deference to him, I don't think all his albums after that haven't really captured what he had on that first album.
First one, right.
You would be a great combination to do I should put in a suggestion box to Frontiers.
Yeah. No, that'd be a lot of fun, brother. Great idea. That's really cool.
Because he's a talented guy, and I don't think the best has come out of him, because he kind of stumbled upon it on his first album, because I remember writing him and telling him, geez, like, you sound like this, 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 and like all these like obscure 80s. He had no idea who I was even talking about. He just came up with this stuff on his own. And, but he really hasn't, you know, he hasn't grown right. from that, you know, like he may need yep. like a pairing with somebody like you.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah. I mean, it would be a fun time. You know,
he's a real talented great guy. Thing. He's a good guitar player. Yeah, he's got fantastic. A good voice. The two of his voices would work well. Yeah. I'll talk to Khalil on that.
There you go. Get an escape going.
Beautiful. Love it.
So is that
fantastic.
That's
it. Yeah.
That's it. Well, Robbie, man, this was a great talk. Real loose conversation tonight. Appreciate the stories. A little bit of the wine stuff, a little bit of Toto. It's all good, you know?
Oh, man. Thanks for having me, fellas. Really, thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
No, it was a pleasure.
Thank you. It was a great conversation.
Thanks for your time.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it.
All right.
Got it.
All right.
Take care, brother.
We'll keep in touch. Talk soon.
Okay. Please.
Take
Please.
Care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Where do we go from here? Staring into space. It looks like the atmosphere is lost without us.